Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. On September 15, 1963, a bomb exploded at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. A group of girls was in the basement of the church preparing for worship. Four were killed by the blast. A fifth survived. 12-year-old Sarah Collins was hospitalized for months and ultimately lost her right eye. Today, more than 50 years later, she still suffers residual effects from the explosion, yet is often overlooked in the larger discussions of the bombing and its role in energizing the civil rights movement. Sarah Collins Rudolph, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You know, most Americans know the story of the four little girls who were killed on September 15th, 1963, in the 16th Street Baptist Church. But fewer know that there was actually a fifth little girl who survived. And, of course, that's you.
Yeah.
Why do you suppose that's the case?
You know, when that happened, people weren't saying anything too much about the survivor. Because there was so much going out about the death of the four girls.
One of them being your sister?
Yes.
14-year-old Addie Mae.
Yes, my sister Addie, because, you know, we were together in the ladies' lounge.
In the basement?
Yes.
What do you remember about that morning?
I remember how we walked to church. It was Jane and Addie and myself. How we were so happy, and Jane had a little purse. And we was throwing it back and forward to each other. And we had to walk about 17 blocks, and we was having a good time all the way to church that morning.
And you were there early. Church service began at 11.
But we was trying to get to Sunday school. But when we got to Sunday school, Sunday school was already in session. So me and Addie stayed in the ladies' lounge, you know, waiting till Sunday school turned out. And our Janie class was upstairs. And because, you know, by being her age, they had all the senior classes upstairs. And that morning, while I was looking at the door, waiting for our class to start, and I seen the girls come in, Cynthia Wesley, Denise McNair, and Carol Robson. So they came into the...
The other girls who were killed that morning.
Yes. So they came into the lounge and went on back to the other side where the stalls were. And they came out together. Denise was in front, and she stopped where Addie was. Addie was standing by the window, and I was on the other side of her by the sink. And when she stopped, she asked Addie to tie the sash on her dress. And when Addie reached out to tie it, we stood there looking, but we didn't get a chance to see her tie it, because that's when the bomb went off.
You know, there had been literally dozens of bombs in Birmingham, Alabama, in the year and a half prior to that event. Were you at all afraid at that point as a child growing up in Birmingham, which, of course, at the time was the most racially segregated and discriminatory city in the U.S.? Did you have a sense of fear?
No, I didn't have a sense of fear. I remember when they bombed Arthur Shores' house. We heard about that. You know, he was a lawyer. And I heard about the bombing in Shuttlesworth Church. And they didn't nothing happen to them, you know, but when the bombs went off, it looked like it was just something that Birmingham was used to, you know, he ain't bombed. And by going to church that morning, we never did think they would bomb the church up.
I just watched the critically acclaimed movie Selma, and I have to say that the scene, which is a little bit different than what happened in real life, of the girls walking down the steps, of course, you were actually one of them. When that explosion happened, I literally jumped out of my seat, and so did so many of the people sitting around me. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what being there must have been like. You saw the movie, too. What was your reaction to the movie? And what did they get right and what didn't they get right?
Well, for one thing, the girls weren't walking down steps. That was one. And when the bomb went off, my husband was with me, and we both almost jumped out of our seat because I wasn't expecting that on that scene. But it just really scared us. And it took me back to that moment you know, that sound, and it just really scared both of us.
You actually spent more than 2 months in the hospital after that event. Tell us a little bit about the injuries you sustained that morning.
Well, when the bomb went off, and I turned to look at Eddie Tand and he said, and all of a sudden, all the debris just came rushing in. And when it rushed in, a lot of glass got in my face and in my eyes. And they was able to save my left eye, but I was blind instantly in my right eye and had so many pieces of glasses in my face. The doctor had said it was about 26 pieces of glass that in my face that was in my eye together.
There's a heartbreaking photograph of you in the hospital. You have two patches over your eyes. And I understand that you didn't know right away that your sister Addie died, nor did you know at the time that you actually lost the vision completely in that one eye and that your right eye was removed.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know the girls was killed. That's all. By me being blind instant, and they came and took me out of church, because when the bomb went off, I called Addie three times. I called her name, but she didn't answer. So the first thing I thought about, maybe they had ran on the other side where the Sunday school area was. But I found out later when I arrived at the hospital, Janie was there. My other sister and
Janie.
I asked her, I said, where Addie? And she said that Addie hurt her back, but she was going to come and see me tomorrow. So I guess she didn't want to get me upset that Addie was killed. So she was talking to somebody while I was laying on the couch, because they told me the eye doctor wasn't there. So while I was laying there waiting on the doctor, that's when I heard her say, tell the nurse somebody. She said one of my sisters got killed.
And you just overheard it?
Yeah, overheard it. That's how I found out. So when they got through operating on my eye, that's when I went back upstairs to my room. My mother was there. She let me know that all the girls were killed. I was the only one survived it.
Although there wasn't, we didn't know of such a thing as post-traumatic stress disorder. You certainly have suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of that.
Yes, I have. You know, when I would hear loud sounds, I just jump, you know, and that's something that I still have. And it seemed like if I turn water on, if it rush out too fast, I jump, you know, all that. It's still in me. And it's just something that looked like I would never get over it, but I hope one day I will.
I'm wondering what it's felt like all these 50-plus years to have, in some respects, been in the shadow of the girls who died. Has that been difficult?
Yes, in a way, it hurts, because I still live it. You know, when I put makeup on, and I still remember it. And when I look in the mirror, prosthetic eyes, I still remember it. You know, something like that you can't forget when you have the injuries on you and you have to see it every day.
You actually have flashbacks.
Yeah, it's always take me back, just knowing I'm putting this on because of what somebody did to me. You bombed the church. And it looked like something I'd never forget.
One of the biggest tragedies is that, despite the fact that the FBI actually had information about who the perpetrators of this heinous crime was, they kept it to themselves. And no one was prosecuted until 1977, when Robert Chambliss finally was prosecuted for the murder of these four girls and went to jail, didn't serve long enough. He was sentenced to life, but died 8 years later. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm concerned, didn't spend as much time as she got out easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that some closure for you, that finally there was some justice in 1977?
You know, at first, I really wasn't satisfied about them waiting so long to have his trial, because they lived their life, and they lived it. But the girls, you know, they didn't get a chance to live their life out. So I felt like since the FBI and all the city officials knew about it, they should have put them on trial right then and there, because they lived a time doing what they wanted to do. So the girls didn't get that chance.
And in fact, two of the perpetrators weren't convicted until 2001 and 2002. So they were decades living free before they finally served. A fourth one died before he could go to trial. And I think one of the biggest tragedies is that your mother she died before anyone was convicted of these crimes.
Yes. And that was 38 years later. And one of them, Cherry, tried to get out of here by saying he was too sick. But
Cherry. Bobby Cherry.
Yeah, Bobby. Bobby Frank Cherry. And he was playing it though he was too sick to go to trial, but they took him to Bryce and they found out he could go to trial, because, you know, every time I would see him, he'd have an old pack of pills in his hand. And he was saying he wasn't able, but I was glad they went on and
saying that he was psychologically not capable to stand trial.
Right. But he would, because they found him. And when they sent him to Bryce, they found out he was able. Yeah.
Another tragedy of all of this is that to this day, you do not know where your sister, Addie Mae Collins, is buried. You wanted to move her casket from one cemetery to another. And when she was exhumed, tell us what happened and why you don't know where she is.
Well, you know, the reason why we didn't know, because, you know, after the funeral, they had three funerals out there in one day. And there was a lot of people.
And Martin Luther King
did a eulogy.
Did the eulogy, did the sermon, the funeral sermon.
But anyway, so many people was out there that day. You know, Jane and them couldn't remember, but only thing she would remember, her remain was by a tree. They buried her close to a tree. So, and we wanted to move her because I would come out there before they dedicated this headstone, because they told us that it was a cross indicating where she was located. And this man, he had been going out there just seeing a cross out there, so he decided to get her a mortal cemetery headstone. So when they exhumed it, it was somebody under it had false teeth.
So you knew, obviously, this was not your 14-year-old sister with false teeth.
Right, and we wanted to move to a mausoleum, because the cemetery was not kept up. I went out there one day, had old broke down lawnmower, and the grass was growing real tall. And we decided we'll move her into a mausoleum, but I had the papers all ready to fix her up. And then the lady called us. She was out there interviewing People at Magazine. She called us. She said, well, the man said that Ed is not here. You're someone with false teeth. And that was so shocking to know. I had been going out there putting flowers out there and found out I was putting flowers on somebody with false teeth. And that really hurt.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. On September 15th, 1963, a bomb exploded at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, killing four girls. A fifth girl survived. Her name is Sarah Collins Rudolph, and she's today's guest. She talked with us about her physical and emotional scars, about living in the shadows of that historic tragedy, and about delayed justice. Today, if someone experienced what you experienced, there would be a victim's compensation fund. When this happened to you, not only in some ways were you overshadowed by the death of the four girls, but it sounds like in some ways you had to deal with the repercussions of this on your own.
Yes. Yes, I did. You know, like we was talking about, did no one say anything about the one that survived. But when I got old enough, I began to go to places like to see could I get victim conversation for added death and my injuries. And people say, well, you know, that happened in 63. So, we can't do nothing about that. And it was really, really shocking. Here I am paying bills for the injury they did to me. Because for years I had glaucoma in my left eye. And
so you were at risk of total blindness?
Yes. And the doctor said that I still have a piece of glass in my left eye, but they don't want to remove it because I just have one eye. And all this, I got to pay these bills on my own. And I was taking drops for so many years for this glaucoma. And after a while, the doctor said that now the drop's not doing any good. And he was going to have to just cut an incision in my eye for the fluid to drain out.
To relieve the pressure in your eye.
Yeah, yes. And I had that done. And he still told me that I had have a cataract, too. And right now, he wants to just try glasses, different types, you know, that strengthen that eye. Because he still don't want to just mess with it because he don't want me to go blind in it. So he said, until then, that's what they was going to do.
You were an A student before this happened.
Yes.
And you had ambitions to become a nurse when you graduated high school.
Yes.
How did this explosion change your life's path?
Well, it changed a lot because, you know, a bombing like that, you don't never be the same. I didn't really study and feel like that because I was always so nervous and so fearful. I just couldn't do it because it changed my life, and I was sickened by added death, and I didn't become a nurse. So I began to get jobs like into foundries. I did foundry work.
Factory work.
Yeah. And also, I worked in one foundry. It was in 3 years. Then I worked in another foundry for 14 years. And it just changed my whole life, really.
We have heard, you know, so many in the movie Selma and in Spike Lee's documentary Four Little Girls. This incident on September 15th, 1963, is referred to as a turning point, as having energized the civil rights movement, as having created a consciousness among white Americans that nothing else prior to that could have. And I'm wondering how you feel about that. And I want to also add that the Reverend Jesse Jackson said, "We transformed a crucifixion into a resurrection." But from where you're sitting, what does that feel like?
Well, I know those girls did things to change, but it was just a shame that those young girls had to die like that. Because only thing we was trying to get was our rights. And they had to take death to get it. And little girls didn't grow up to be what they want to be. You know, it kind of hurts. It really does, because they didn't have to die like that for things to go right in Birmingham.
The reason Martin Luther King and SNCC descended on Birmingham was because of the rampant discrimination in that city. And I'm wondering if you and your family or any members of your family were involved in the movement at the time.
Yes, my mother would. My mother would go to the movement meetings every Wednesday. And I remember her always going. She didn't miss a meeting.
And they were held in the very church where the bomb exploded.
Yes. And we would stay home by ourselves, and she'll go to the meet. She was very, very interested in marching, and she wanted our rights because Birmingham wasn't right. You know, when you're in Birmingham at that time, If we need a policeman, call a policeman. We couldn't get a policeman because they was against us.
One-third were known to be Klansmen.
And fire department, people in the fire department, they put the water hose on the people. The dogs, they put the dogs on the marches. And the only thing we wanted to do, we wanted to change that. We wanted to go into the stores and buy our clothes and try our clothes on. They didn't let us try our clothes on, but we can buy it. And then we couldn't try the shoes on. Our mother had to get a marker and mark our feet size on a piece of paper and then go and buy shoes for us. Yeah, we wanted all that changed because we was feeling like we weren't even human beings. You know, we couldn't use the restroom. We couldn't even use the hydrant to get water. You know, they got black water, white water signs on that. And we wanted all that changed.
There's a scene, actually, in Spike Lee's documentary, Four Little Girls, which came out in 1997, where Denise McNair's father says he went with his wife and daughter shopping, and they were in a department store, and his daughter could smell hamburgers coming from the lunch mm-hmm. counter that was in this department store and said, "Daddy, let's go have a hamburger." And he said, no, we'll eat at home. And that evening, he had to tell his daughter why she couldn't get that hamburger. Mm-hmm. And he said telling his daughter that story was as painful to him as seeing her dead body in that church.
I know it was. Yeah, you couldn't go into places and eat. If you get a sandwich there, you had to go to a side window. And they'll open up that window and let you have your food. But you cannot sit in cafeterias.
What is Birmingham, Alabama like today?
Well, things have changed. I have seen a lot of changes in Birmingham. All the signs are down. And now we can, you know, get things we want. We don't have to go to Wonders. We can use the same restroom. A lot of things have changed.
If you were to pinpoint what you see as the most pressing civil rights issue of today, what would you say it is?
I still see some of the police might be strict, but I really haven't noticed it because I haven't yet stopped. They hadn't stopped me driving or anything, but maybe that's probably it. And maybe something concerning the our mayor, maybe things like that. When we go to our mayor, we try to let them know what happened. And people, they're not really concerned. That's about it. But other than that, Birmingham had really changed a lot.
The three men who were ultimately convicted of this crime, only one is still living. And he, like the other two, continues, despite overwhelming evidence, continues to deny that he was involved in this. And yet there's evidence that they planted something in the neighborhood of 122 sticks of dynamite under that church. Has anyone reached out to you? And would there be more closure if someone apologized for this?
Yes. My husband reached out to Blanton. Thomas Blanton, he's the only one.
Who's still living in jail, in prison.
So when he wrote the letter, the first thing he said that he didn't do it. He said it was the man that killed Viola LaRusso, it was that person. And I haven't had anybody to apologize. I went to the court with all of them, Robert Chamberlain, Thomas Blanton, and Cherry. But they haven't said they apologize.
Remarkably, from what I'm reading, you have forgiven them, and forgiveness is, you know, I think it can be defined different ways by different people. So I'm curious to know, what does forgiveness mean to you?
I went on to forgive them because I didn't want to hold unforgiveness in me, because they say when you hold it on the inside, you begin
when you hold the anger and the hate.
Yeah, and they said you don't do it but get sick, different things like arthritis. These sickness come on you, so I don't want that to come up on me because I'm holding on to it. But one thing, I can forgive them, but, you know, like I was telling you earlier, I can't forget simply because when I look in the mirror and see what they've done to me, it's always a reminder of that day.
What has it meant to you to finally share your story? There was a fifth girl there, and that fifth girl is Sarah Collins Rudolph.
Well, it meant a lot because I was there, and I believe God left me there to be a witness because many people for years were saying that these young girls was in there putting on their silk robes, getting ready for the youth service, and that wasn't what it was. It was just the fact that they class just turned out, and they just went to the restroom.
It was just another day, another Sunday school that forever changed all of your lives.
It did. Yes, it did. And it was wrong for them to put a bomb on the 16th Street Baptist Church and kill those girls because they was innocent, sweet girls. All of them was very sweet, and kill them.
Finally, what did all of this do to your faith in God?
I believe it made my faith stronger because when the bomb went off, I called on the Lord. And I really believe since I had that opportunity to call on him, he came and he saved me simply for that purpose because where those girls were standing, that's where they placed the bomb. But he had me on the other side of the church right by the water, and he saved me to, you know, let people know what really happened that day.
That was Sarah Collins Rudolph. She was with her sister Addie Mae and three other girls in the basement of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, the morning it was bombed by Klansmen back in 1963. The other girls died, only she survived. To learn more, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.